Okay, and we're going to finish up the oral presentations this morning and talk about some cold soils. And our final speaker is Laureen Lynn.
Thank you. My name is Laureen Lynn. I work for HDR in Alaska. It's an engineering firm that's around the nation. This presentation that I'm giving is based on some research I did while I was working on my master's study at University of Alaska Fairbanks. And just as a preface here, the background on my slides is a picture of the Arctic sky on a good day. So in soil taxonomy today, there are 12 orders. Only histosols have a limnic subgroup in them. None of the others do. Limnic materials are both organic and inorganic materials that are deposited in water by precipitation or by aquatic organisms, either algae or diatoms, or they're derived from underwater and floating aquatic plants modified by aquatic animals. And these include coprogenous earth, which is fecal matter, diatomaceous earth, which is the exoskeletons of diatoms, and marl, which is the reworked shells of aquatic animals. This pond in this picture is pretty typical of ponds that are found up in the Arctic near the coast, and in these ponds is where a lot of this deposition is occurring. And this is a picture of an area that we call the golfing green. The migrating geese had come through and chewed the grass and the sedges down to their nubbins and deposited a ton of goose poop everywhere. So there's plenty of fecal matter there being deposited. So just to work it through to show where the limnic subgroup falls right now. In the histosols, we have the pholas, the fibrists, the saprists, and hemists. And then the limnic is found only in the first three listed here. If we follow it through in the saprists, then we have the sulfosaprists, cryosaprists, and haplosaprists. I'm going to follow through in the cryosaprists. Cryosaprists are typically found in Alaska. And so you'll see in this, we have the lithic, limnic, pteric, fluviquintic, and typic. And there's the limnic group in taxonomy as it is. And as I see, we found these limnic soils up in the Arctic in the gelisols. And so I'm looking at inserting limnic into the gelisol order. So to talk about my study, this is this map in the lower right shows the area between Barrow and the border with Canada. My sample sites were at Cape Halkett. Unfortunately, the circle is slightly misplaced. It should be where the sea is in Cape. And in Prudhoe Bay, which is the major oil exploration area in Alaska. So to zoom in a bit, looking at Prudhoe Bay, this is the bay that composes Prudhoe Bay, and you can see all the oriented thaw lakes that are present in the landscape there. And you can also see the spidering network of oil exploration in the picture. It's faint, but you can see how widespread it is across the landscape. So then to zoom in on the white square there even further to get a closer look, this is where the samples that I found came from, and you can also see the oriented thaw lakes in this area right along the coast. Now, in Prudhoe Bay, because there is so much development, there is some influence from the roads cutting off the flow of moisture across the surface landscape. So things do get slightly altered because of that, but I don't think that influences how this limnic soil forms. Now, to jump over to Cape Halkett and the Lonely Dew Line Station, the dew line stations are defense early warning stations. They were a naval operation during the Cold War to protect us from the Russians if they were to come over and attack us. They've since been abandoned, but the equipment still sits up there. The lake in the left is Teshapuk Lake. This area is significant right now because recently it was leased to oil and gas companies for further exploration. It's also considered a very sensitive wildlife habitat area In the lower right of the picture, you'll see the Colville River Delta, which is one of the largest bird migration areas in the North Slope, and Tushpuk Lake is also a big bird migration area. So the Lonely Dew Line Station is located generally in this area, and then to zoom in further on that, that's what it looks like. It is very well named. It is very lonely. So, just to give a little bit of background about this kind of research, it's not, I was amazed when I came to the Lower 48 and saw one of these trucks that you can drive up and it's got a thing that goes up and you get your soil sample and you're done. I was like, wow, that's great, because getting to these sites is really challenging. So I just wanted to show you a little bit about how we get there. So you can take an airliner to Prudhoe Bay. Alaska Airlines flies there multiple times a day. There's plenty of oil workers going back and forth between Prudhoe Bay and Anchorage. When you leave Anchorage, this was from the airplane window flying over Denali. Once in a while, the Alaska Airlines pilots, if you have good weather and good wind, will fly you really close to the mountain and you get to see it. As you go further north, you have to go over the Brooks Range and then out to the Arctic Slope. Once you get to Prudhoe Bay, you have to take a small air taxi to your site. This is the headquarters of the one we used. It didn't instill confidence in me when I saw this place, I'll tell you that. But the pilot is fantastic. His name is Kermit. That's him right there. We all piled into the airplane with all the fellow researchers I worked with and flew to our site. And this is at the Lonely Dew Line Station airstrip that still exists there. So then once we were at Lonely, we had to use a helicopter to get out to our sites, because walking across this landscape, we did have to walk across this landscape for, I don't know, a half mile or a mile one day with samples, 50, 60 pounds of samples on our backs. It is horrible walking. And you really can't go very far. A half mile is a very challenging walk. So we use a helicopter to get to our sites. This happened to be a BLM helicopter. And then this is looking out over the pilot's shoulder out at the Arctic Ocean as we were flying to our sites. So it's pretty complicated, and it's also expensive to get to these places to look at the soil. In the winter, when we wanted to do any exploration under sea ice, we would take snow machines or snowmobiles out, and that way we can then dig out the snow, drill through the ice, and then take our soil samples from underneath the ice. It is a barren landscape in the winter. We relied on a GPS. Sometimes we'd go out with Native Alaskans to help us with directions and just local knowledge, because it is a threatening landscape if you make an error. This was a time when I decided I just needed to walk. I was really cold, and so the snow machines took off, and all of a sudden I realized, you know, there are polar bears here. Wait. And another challenge up there is where to stay. So if you go to Prudhoe Bay, you can stay in the lodging areas there. There's a hotel. It's not very nice. I don't recommend it. We were lucky enough to stay in the Vico facilities, which now is owned by CH2M Hill, and it's the whole problem with Ted Stevens and all that craziness. But when we were in the Colville River Delta, we stayed with a family who live out there, and husband and wife both grew up in the Arctic. And the husband's family established a homestead out here over 60 years ago. They're an amazing family. They have four sons. He was a polar bear hunting guide. He flew airplanes for the oil workers. And I don't know if you could have picked out where they were. That's their homestead. I highly recommend this. If you ever get a chance to go to the Colville River Delta, I recommend staying with these guys. That's their house. This is this great directional sign they have that shows the distances to places over 3,000 miles to Washington, D.C., and over 3,000 miles to Tokyo. So at Lonely, these abandoned shelters were kind of gross. Some of them were locked. We pitched tents, or some of us did, slept out there. It was kind of harsh weather. This was the most beautiful day we had, and after that, it was pretty much windy, rainy, and cold the whole time. So to describe how we sampled, it's how we gathered our samples. Once we get to our sites, this is actually in that area I was calling the golf green with all the gas, the goose poop. First, we dig a hole. Now, the soils there are frozen, not very far below the surface. And so you dig a hole into the thawed portion, which we call the active layer, dig the hole into the active layer, look at our soil profile in the pit, and then after that we have to drill with a gas-powered corer to get out a permafrost sample. So this takes two people. It helps if you're tall and strong. And we drill down into the ground. It's about a 7 centimeter in diameter tube that's a meter long with threads around the outside of it and teeth at the bottom to bite into the soil. Once you pull the core out, then you can detach it from the unit, spill it out into these pipes that were cut, and examine the soil that way. It does make it a little difficult because instead of having an entire profile to examine, you've got this rounded tube that you're looking at, and this is your soil profile that you examine to look at things. So this is in near Barrow when we had soils there, and this is really typical of the soils that I found at Prudhoe Bay. They're highly organic soils. They're deep, rich browns, mostly silt loams, very organic, and then even sometimes we'd find where you have remnant peat that's been frozen, and this is significant. There's been a lot of research done about the carbon that is stored in these soils deep, deep down in the under the surface. So when I pulled this up, I looked at this and said, sand? We don't have sand here, and this pale sand. And once it was thawed enough to get a grip of some of the soil, I realized that's not sand at all. It was soft and smooth when I textured it. So I was really curious about what this was, about sand grain size. So all of our samples we kept frozen when we were there. We put it in coolers out just on the ground because it's about freezing in the summer in the air temperature anyway. Then we take it to Prudhoe Bay. They have a frozen storage center there, fly them to Anchorage, keep them frozen. When I got to the laboratory, I was able to then thaw this and look at it under a microscope. So this, in this picture, you can see this pond, and this was really typical of this area where I found this the limnic soil. These ponds have this deposition layer in them. You can kind of see the reddish brown color, and so there is all this algae that has accumulated and formed in the bottom of these ponds, and that's where I'm thinking that this material is coming from. Here is the surface active layer profile. You can see that it's a combination of aeolian lusts and silts and organic matter that goes deep into the ground. Typical organic carbon content in these soils is anywhere from 12 to 20%. Now this is a complete core from Prudhoe Bay. There were several that I pulled up that had this limnic soil in it. So the active layer was that first part of the soil horizon. So you piece it together that way, and that's why the soil profile here starts at 37 centimeters. So 37 centimeters below the ground, I hit this limnic material. It extended to about 60. And then I started hitting more ice and more organic materials. And deep below that, near the bottom of the core, you can really only see that it says 36 and 37 inches. That is more silty mineral material. And so this limnic material is buried beneath the surface deposition, and it's above these ice lenses. And the ice lenses, you can see at 29 inches, are those pieces of ice, and those form in a freezing and thawing action when that part of the soil was closer to the surface. So magnified under the microscope, this was a stereo microscope, and so it's three-dimensional, so there's the blurry parts are further away and the clearer parts are closer. This part is the organic soil material that was typical there, and then this is the limnic material. They look like little fleshy blobs under the microscope. They're flesh-colored, and they kind of feel fleshy as well. And magnified more, you can kind of see that fleshiness of the remnant algae that has been frozen. So these soils have super high organic carbon content. Ranges anywhere from 26 to 43%. Limnic soils, some of them are inorganic, And so they have much lower organic carbon content. These have very high organic carbon content because they are algae has a more concentrated carbon than plant materials. Plant material has cellulose, and these don't. And they also have very, very low bulk density. When this was thawed out, it was extremely light. It was actually rather staticky and hard to handle. It would easily blow away if you breathed on it. So the management implications of finding the soil and why we would even care that there's a limnic soil up in the Arctic slope has to do with the fact that there is development going on in this area. And we also have some climate change issues with thawing of the permafrost. So if you have these super high organic, super low bulk density soils, if they get exposed, dug up, or the ground thaws, then you've got all this carbon being released, and it's just a more significant place, and it might be an area worth avoiding in development. So this shows one of the pipelines heading west. It's actually the drilling site is at the end of that, and that's being shipped back into Prudhoe Bay and then sent down the Alaska pipeline. Here's some more of the exploration. It really is a spidering network. When people talk about it saying, oh, it's only going to cover 200 square miles or whatever they're going to say that they when they were talking about drilling in Anwar, you need to remember that it's not a concentrated type thing. It's all spidering across the landscape. And then, of course, there's the facilities in Prudhoe Bay that are required to deal with the oil and refine it and such and get it ready to, not refine it, but get it ready to roll down the pipeline. Okay, so this possible change that I'm talking about in the gelisols, we have the histels, turbels, and orthels, and I found this limnic soil in the histels, in the glacistels, hemistels, and saprostels. And to follow one of these through to show this potential change, follow the hemistels, we would be inserting limnic right under lithic and over teric, just as it is in the histosols. And I would like to thank my lead professor when I was doing my master's studies, Dr. Chin Lu Ping. Without him, this wouldn't have been possible. It's been a great working with him, and I want to thank him. And now I will take any questions.
You know, there's a formal mechanism for including that kind of stuff in soil taxonomy. Have you submitted a proposal to the Western Regional Soil Taxonomy Committee?
So the question was, have I gone through the formal process of submitting this yet? No, it is not ready for submission. Because the area needed in order to show that this is a significant, that this is just not a single pocket, it's not worth a series name or something like that, I haven't documented that yet. There's another researcher who has been finding this soil as well on Cape Halkett, and I don't have his data yet. And so it's not yet in that, to that point, but it will be.
Any other questions? Okay, if not, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.